Thanks to ATI Physical Therapy for powering the episodes we recorded while at CSM in Boston this year. Have you ever thought about where your career in physical therapy could take you? It's not just about the job, it's about making real connections that help patients get better faster. Imagine working somewhere you can grow through mentorship and get leadership training that matters. Sounds like a place you'd fit right in? Find out more at ATIPT.com and make a difference together. Gentlemen, thanks for making time. As you can hear in the background, there's some noise going on. There's a lot of action and din. That's what they call the din in the background.
Is, is there a conference going on? Where are we? Recording
in a
closet?
Is that what all these people are doing here? I thought they were here to see us.
I was going to ask them later.
Tom and Rain, not the first time either of you have been on the show. So you guys are, we call it friends of the show.
Alumni.
Yeah. Well, I like that. Yeah. Does that mean we have to give money?
Yeah,
he's going to ask. We are going to give.
We'll put you on a drip campaign. We'll drop you an email every couple of weeks and say, listen, you guys have supported others, and now you support people like you.
Pay it forward.
We'll send you a mug every once in a while. So we're talking about something that gets mentioned a lot, and it's going to relate to both of you in different ways. And I like connections that don't look like they make sense forwards but do backwards. So, Rain, we'll start with you. You did research. You're a research guy. And you did some. You looked into something that people mention in hallways at CSM. People have conversations. People throw out these terms that get used so much. They kind of become cliches because they get used so much. And that's lifelong learning. We're all lifelong learners. We say that. But then a researcher goes, you stroke your chin and go, what's that mean? And is it good? Is it good? And how good? And how do we know? So you looked into that because it is something that is sort of in the ether within our profession. What'd you find? What'd your research, where'd it bring you?
We looked at, and really one of the terms that's being used a lot now is this idea of a master adaptive learner,
okay,
which puts a little bit more framework to the sort of like, what does that mean, lifelong learning? And one of the things, and we'll keep calling it lifelong learning because it's easier to say, but one of the things that model provides for us is some characteristics of what makes someone a lifelong learner. What are the characteristics?
Right.
So things like resilience, a growth mindset, curiosity, like sort of an internal motivation to learn. And so what we did is we used that model to look at the characteristics of rehab professionals, so PTs, OTs, speech-language pathologists, in several large organizations around the country. And we looked at when you have individuals, rehab professionals, who have these characteristics, how does that interact with the environment that they're in? And are they in a good learning environment? And then what are the effects of that on things like career satisfaction and intention to stay with that organization? And we also used in our model, we call them filters because it's kind of like you're filtering the effects, through something, research-wise, if they're mediators, right? But we look at it, so you have the effects of the environment, you have the effects of just the characteristics of the individual,
the person.
Then they come together, and how do those things, they get influenced by things like professional engagement and organizational engagement. Well, so what we found was that the more, the higher characteristics of lifelong learning that you had, you actually were, less satisfied as a, like career satisfaction in our model, which at first we were like, what does this mean?
That feels opposite.
Right?
Okay, that's not good.
And then, we looked at it and said, okay, well, our model of career satisfaction was asking questions about things like career advancement, learning new skills, and things like that. And so you're like, okay, well, this kind of makes sense because these people are driven, right? They're lifelong learners. They're driven. They're always looking for more. And so their natural state of being satisfied with where they are is less.
Lean forward, right.
Yeah. And so we're like, okay, that makes sense. And then we saw that, these individuals also had less intention to stay with their organization. And so like, okay, well, what does that mean? And so there's, we're kind of looking at some of the data. We're like, oh, well, that actually makes sense as well because they're going to go where the opportunity is.
If they feel like they hit a ceiling, they're going to go, great, well, I'm going to break through that.
Exactly. And so then what really supported that model was when we looked at organizational engagement as a mediator. And what we found is that when those individuals were engaged in their organization, it sort of negated that
desire to leave? Or?
Yeah, desire to leave. They were more satisfied. They were less likely to leave because they were getting their needs met at that organization.
What are the ways that organizations can do that? Like, what are some examples? Because you looked across a couple different large organizations.
Yeah. And what we found is the biggest driver of really all of those things, career satisfaction, independently career satisfaction, independently intention to stay, and independently organizational engagement, we found that meeting basic psychological needs. So self-determination theory, is where this kind of comes from.
Right.
And it talks about there's really, people have three basic needs that motivate them.
Okay.
One is the need for autonomy. People want to feel like they have choice in what they do.
Got it.
The need for competency. They want to feel like they're good at doing it. And then three is relatedness, that by doing whatever it is, that they're a part of something, bigger than themselves. And so when people were in environments where those psychological needs were more met, they had higher engagement, which then made them more satisfied with their career and more likely to stay with that organization.
Are you familiar with Ikigai?
I'm not.
So just Japanese theory of your sense of purpose. The three things you mentioned, there's just one four missing in Ikigai. And, of course, it's like Japanese. It's very symmetrical. It's a Venn diagram of four circles where they all cross perfectly in the middle. And the four are what you're good at, what the world needs, what you love doing, and what you can get paid for. And they're like, that's where it's a situation where three out of four kind of is bad, because if you're lacking any one of those, so it's like you're paying attention to those. And if you apply those to a job or a profession, you can get paid for those things because those things have value. So these things kind of make sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's been shown, that idea, and it's really interesting. I wasn't familiar with the Japanese model, so I'm going to go back and find out some more about
that.
But this model of psychological need satisfaction has been shown across industries, across settings, across cultures. Like, it's just one of those, there's very few things in research that hold up consistently, but it's definitely one of those, items.
Anything surprise you? I always like to ask people who do research, because you spend a lot of, what people don't see when they're not standing next to the poster or listening to a presentation or reading a paper is all the stuff that went into that. So anything surprise you or shock you when you were doing it? Anything past the eyebrow test? What made you go, ooh, that's interesting?
Yeah, probably the two things were, one, what we talked about with the negative effect of lifelong learning. Our initial reaction was, hey, what's going on here? Yeah. This is not what we expected. And then the other thing was, we talked about organizational engagement. We also looked at professional engagement. And so are you, and it sort of gets to the professional identity and who you are and those things. And one of the things we were testing was, is engagement and different things different, right? So are you just an engaged person or not an engaged person? Are there different loci of engagement?
Okay, what'd you find?
And we found that, they were different, that they, professional engagement and organizational engagement did not interact with each other. They were totally separate things. But interestingly, and the part that raised our eyebrows, was there was not a lot of effect from professional engagement on career satisfaction or intention to stay.
Say that again. So professional engagement didn't affect career engagement?
Yeah, there was no significant relationship between professional engagement, career satisfaction, and intention to stay. And we're not sure what to do with that yet.
Right.
Our question immediately is, okay, well, what does it affect?
Right.
But what we did see was that professional engagement and lifelong learning characteristics, those were very strongly associated. So, part of it might be, are individuals who are lifelong learners, are they looking to their profession to meet some of those
fill the void.
Needs?
Right.
Is that different in those who are getting it met in their organization versus not? We don't know.
Yeah.
But those are some of the questions that come up.
I've heard it before from, people within APTI. I've been on committees, and some people will join their cyclical joiners. Committee, 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 committee. They get over-committed. They're not getting what they need, and they keep scrolling, like doom scrolling. They keep looking for it and not getting it. And eventually, they burn out and they leave.
Yeah.
So the question always is, and I know APTA has done this, which is, what are people looking for? Do we provide it? No. Can we? Or do we provide? And this was the kicker. I used to talk to some of the communications people like Jason Bellamy. He's like, a lot of times we do provide it, they just don't know about it. And that's a communications issue. So sometimes it's there in the organization, but you don't know about it. Tom, you're sitting here looking and listening to this. Your role sort of is on the this is of interest to you when you see research like this. When you're absorbing this, what are you thinking?
Yeah, it's hugely important. I mean, we were preparing for kind of this podcast and just so happened to be scrolling through kind of the PTJ blast, and I was like,
ding, 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 ding.
We need to talk to Rain. Because it's an emerging area in research. The only other piece that I really know about, and it kind of had that same spark, you know, in terms of informing what I do on a day-to-day basis, is there was a poster presentation at the North Carolina APTA. It was a student poster at a High Point, so shout out to High Point and Lance. And essentially it looked at intention to stay in the profession was at risk when you had a high fear of losing out, which I think is probably somewhat closer to this kind of lifelong learning. There's some symmetry there, but it was guarded against by people who had high amounts of, you know, essential professional orientation or high professional identity. So caused me to think, well, what are the things that PTs do that give them that high professional identity?
Right.
And I really think, you know, PTs are smart. They really, really are. If anything, overqualified in some ways, you know, in terms of getting in school. So it's a mix of that person who gets out, and if they're not practicing at the type of license, say, this is it.
Right.
You know, so I think what are the things that get people beyond this is it? Well, it comes down to that organizational engagement. I feel like I'm learning. I feel like I'm getting better. I'm building my competence.
I move the needle here. Yeah, what I do matters.
The needle. I have autonomy. Someone's not telling me what to do. I'm doctorally trained. What are you talking about? Like, I can make independent decisions for what's best for my patients. So I think that over-management, some things really kind of affects that piece and that engagement. And then also they found was that folks that identified as a specialist in something.
Got it.
Specialist in vestibular, pelvic, sports, arms, whatever that is, seem to be protective.
What does that mean, protective? What do you mean?
Protective against leaving the organization.
Oh, got it.
Which we have a huge issue with right now. I mean, APTA has released some stats. Like, we had huge professional attrition over the last 2-3 years. That's not just unique to PT. It's in healthcare. It's in everywhere, right? The great resignation sort of thing.
Right.
We see that it's getting better, both internally and kind of at the meta professional level. APTA just released, you know, that, hey, job openings are going down. There seems to be some better stickiness, things along those lines. But, hey, we really need to help people find that professional identity so they don't start questioning their decision. They don't start, you know, doing the Instagram of all their peers and, probably I should be making more money. Wouldn't I be more happy if, you know, a lot of times if you're not happy where you are, there's only so many things that you can change.
Right.
And typically your job is one of them. Either, you know, hey, leaving the organization, going to another organization, or maybe, you know, leaving treatment, patient care and going into another aspect of care certainly happens, what we see all the time. And also that, maybe I would be happy if I were a day trader.
Right.
Maybe I'd be happier if I was a product tester.
You could launch a podcast. You could just do that.
You could do a podcast. I mean, maybe we're talking to an expert on this piece. I think you've found a professional identity, though.
Right.
But it's about finding that passion, which you really, really care about, which you feel you're pretty good at.
Right.
You know, and also you get that meaningful purposeness kind of coming through. So a lot of my job is just helping folks find that. Right. And I love your point on the APTA, because a lot of these things we have in place, this challenge always is in communication, making sure people know that they're there, that people utilize the resources that are there. Because I think generally everyone acts from a place of, we've heard you, we did this. But a lot of times that message doesn't come across. People say, oh, it's the same. Right. There's nothing for me. I'm going to go seek this satisfaction, fulfillment, and engagement somewhere else.
But so now you're listening to what Rain is saying, and you're like, okay, I'm seeing this, but he's, you know, validating it. I use the Ikigai to launch a podcast and figure out what I do, right? That's a unique thing. But you've got to do it at an organization or an APTA association or any company. You've got to do it at scale for people, right? You can't spend time running around sitting down with Jimmy, let's draw 4 circles and figure out what you like, right? You've got to look at it profession-wide across not hundreds but thousands of people. How does an organization like ATI do that now, knowing that programs that are robust and meaningful take time to develop and you're developing the right things? How do you plan that? How do you create that?
Yeah, the first thing is you ask. You ask what people are looking for. They don't always know, but you know, with some questioning, you can kind of, you know, get
tease
a sense
out
of things. But a perfect example is what we already talked about, mentorship, when we were kind of last talking.
Right.
Hey, I want mentorship. Okay. Well, we have this mentorship program. Well, I don't want that. there has to be that, well, what does that mean to you? What does that look like? And when you talk about at scale, it's about being flexible, not rigid. Right? You can't have 2,000 different programs, but right. you can have a program that's super malleable based off what it is that someone's looking for. Because right. when we say mentorship, it's probably a third, a third, a third. A third of people are really looking for, hey, I have some clinical feelings of I'm not doing kind of what I should be. Like, that's when I say mentorship, I mean I want someone to do skills with me. I want clinical reasoning. I want to talk through patients. There's another third who are probably like, ah, you know, I feel pretty good with the patient part, but maybe this whole documentation thing, maybe struggling with authorizations or any of the millions of barriers that our clinicians, right. you know, encounter on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. And then there's a third where you kind of just got to, you know, hey, let's figure this out together because right. you're not giving me enough to kind of figure it out. I feel that you're at risk. You're kind of telling me you're at risk. But you feel okay clinically, you feel okay with this other aspects. Sometimes it's things that are outside of work, you know, certainly that does come into play, but maybe it's like kind of life, maybe it's time management, maybe it's just all these different aspects that people feel pressure for. But at scale, you can't be restrictive. That's a big lesson I learned probably from 2017 to 2019 to post-pandemic. You have to decide design a program that can fit an individual or thousands of individuals. If you force into one program, inherently you're going to have some hits and you're going to have a lot of misses.
Right. I mean, but this is paying attention to what people are telling you. I bet you if you did this 10 years ago, would have said something different, right?
It'd be interesting to see. Yeah. I'm not sure. But, you know, as I listen to you talk about that, it makes me think about, you know, our residency, like, programs mm-hmm. and, you know, where that's going. And that's one of the things that, you know, we just finished another study where we went around the country and looked at residency programs and right. Exemplar programs, right? Yep. And what we saw in those organizations was that, you know, even if you weren't a part of the residency program itself, that learning culture that was there yeah. and that, like, competence that people learned.
Collateral
people did
value.
That. Yeah, yep. And it looked maybe different for different people and different organizations did things, but it was very much, you know, it sort of drove everyone's, you know, sense of, yeah. you know, learning that, and being a part of that organization.
That ambient culture of learning, yeah. you know.
Hey, some people aren't ready for it at that moment.
Yeah, even if it's not a program for me, I'm really happy you have that, either because maybe I want to do it later or I might want to do it later, or I just love being in an area where learning is important.
Right, right. Yeah. And this isn't my bag, but I'm glad that it is, but maybe a little later there will be, or maybe I'll change. I heard someone say, I don't read books twice. I just read a book and then I'm always proud of myself when I do read a book, but I don't read the same book twice. And there was a guy, Ryan Holiday, he's like the Daily Stoic, and he said, I read this book every year. I'm like, that's weird. He said, because the book hasn't changed, but I have. Sure. And that's kind of unique. So you might not like it now, you like being around the people, but eventually you change, and now that thing is still there. So Tom, everything you're saying is nice, right? You're hearing the research, and this is like nice, like research and practice. Like usually you guys are like, you know, you're like, but you don't understand me and you don't understand me. This is nice in theory, but what would this look like in reality? What would creating something like this in an organization look like tangibly?
Yeah, I mean, just to call out a couple points, and a lot of iteration has gone in, right? You know, for reflecting back 5 years, 10 years, where we thought we needed to be from a development engagement perspective,
right.
We're getting better every year. But, hey, part of it is getting off on the right foot, right? First impressions tend to last, right? What did I hear in the recruitment versus what am I getting in my first week? Super important. So, you know, onboarding, we make it really, really, really critical. You know, we really elongate. We're orientation is over 50 days. Wow. Then you go into a mentorship program, and then you have the possibility of going into a certificate program. And all these things are free, they're optional, and, you know, things like that, but all of them are malleable and designed for the busy clinician, because work-life balance has become more important for folks, obviously. Our most recent kind of contribution here in terms of this ambient learning environment is we recently founded the Institute for Musculoskeletal Advancement, yep. a 501c3 research institute that ATI is just getting underway, because we have a lot of data. We are fanatical about collecting outcomes. We have 3.something million patient cases beginning to end.
Wow.
We've leveraged it in a lot of research. I mean, call out to Chuck and Ellen and Adam and anyone through there. But you wouldn't believe how many full-time clinicians say, hey, you know what? I'd love to get some exposure in research. I'd love to, I don't know, maybe I did a research project when I was school or in residency or things like that, and I've kind of come away from that. So really we've designed this institute that there is a position, there is a role for full-time clinicians to get paid, which is always a differentiator between volunteerism, sure, to actually contribute to that research, whether it's in data analysis, whether it's in just cleaning, a lot of the unsexy things, right? Everyone sees publications and presentations, but, oh man, the iceberg, right? There's 90% that doesn't go, and when you've been in a dark room trying to go through an Excel sheet for a long time, you kind of really realize whether research is for you or not.
Right.
But that's one piece where we can contribute to this environment of learning. We can engage people in a way, because that's what we were hearing. We were hearing, hey, I want to contribute to this. I know we have a lot of data. I know we do research, but how can I be a part of that? So the, you know, IMISCA is a huge part of that commitment.
But I don't have to go all, I hear, I can try it a little bit. It's still, it's part of my job. It doesn't have to be my entire job because I don't want to take a leap. That's too scary. But I sort of want to dip a toe in, and I want to make it feel meaningful. I don't want to just do it on the side. So it sounds like you heard a lot of that and made it possible. It can't be easy to coordinate, though. I mean, that's a lot of people, a lot of things, and you're, I mean, it sounds like all you're doing is teaching, which is kind of fun.
Well, we're getting underway. I think we're going to learn a lot, obviously, but, you know, we've built the structure, built the position, we've filed, you know, we have all these things going, and now we're really figuring that out. But you're right, the coordination piece of, okay, this is a part-time person, this is someone willing to give me 8-10 hours a week.
Right.
Hey, we have these existing lines of research. We know these are the tasks and, you know, things that need to be done in order to go from a good question to a research output. You're right, it's a lot of teaching, but especially when you're doing teaching at scale, all of a sudden, you know, that investment really pays it forward and pays off, and, and we're really excited for what this holds for us. One, for engaging these individuals, also continuing to add to kind of the scientific knowledge that's out there, you know, but also opening up partnerships. ATI has a long history of research, but as a for-profit institution, we've had some folks that, hey, you know, that's not, or certain grant funding that's been unavailable to us, going this route and really saying, hey, we're doubling down our research and our education, we think just is going to pay off in all of those areas.
All right.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, I think that's a really, you know, great example. Like, as I listen to you talk about that, I mean, I hear all those parts, right? You have clinicians who now sort of have choice in what they do during, you know, as part of their job, right? There's some clinics, some research, you know, things. You're supporting them in becoming competent in what they're doing. You're giving that support. Just saying, okay, go do some research. Like, right?
Well, that's under-supervised, and people like that as hate that as much as micromanagement.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, and then especially having this, like, center and all these people that are involved in it, like, they're now a part of something as they're doing that. And so you're really ticking off all three of the things from the psychological need and four of the, I can't say the word that you said.
Ikigai.
Ikigai? We're going to practice ikigai later on that.
This is kind of cool. And I love the serendipity of it. Is we were going to talk about IMISCA and all the importances. And I bet you we would have brought, like, well, I'm sure that would play into someone's satisfaction and maybe them staying or not. And Rain's over here doing the research saying, these things contribute to this. It's like, hey, look, they're doing something that you had. This is a tangible example of that. So I'm going to ask you both the same question, knowing that, you know, listen, you guys are research guys, so you can always say, well, I assume, or this would need more research, which is a smart business model.
It depends.
Do always say it depends.
It always depends.
Needs more research, and I can do that research. It gives you a chance for another job. What would success look like for something like this? I mean, this is your program, and you're a person who studied something like it. What should or could success look like 5 or 10 years down the road for something like IMISCA?
Yeah, I mean, for us, we're measuring ourselves in publications, presentations, number of people that are interested in, number of new partners that we have. We have a number of legacy partners with, you know, learning institutions, ECRI, USC, things like that. But how many more people want to, you know, say, hey, this is going to be a great vehicle. This is something that we can continue to improve the profession. So number of partners and grant funding. I mean, I think all of those metrics play in to say, hey, we're successful. This is a good idea. You know, and then the selfish part of me on the talent development piece.
There it is.
Hey, we're seeing attrition go down. We're seeing attraction go up. All of these different pieces. I'm having more people raise their hand and saying, I'm talking to ATI because I have an interest in research, but I probably want to dip my toe. Or maybe I want to develop some skills. Because if that person ultimately wants to go a terminal degree route or, you know, a DPT program, hey, that's great. We want to just be a great formative step on your journey. You talked to Laura Petra-Simone yesterday. Yep. Great example. Duke faculty that was a sports resident for us. Did a number of, you know, years, worked with Ellen, became an expert, just incredible clinician, and then said, okay, the next step for me is UNC. So, you know, we have the saying, hey, the best place to be is at ATI, but the next best place is to be from ATI. And we're really proud of our alumni. Cool, and if we can continue to just help those folks, it's not about bringing people in forever. It's about bringing them in, helping them develop, having them highly engaged, you know, and when they ultimately leave, look back at their time really positively.
Yeah. What else would you suggest that they take a look at? Because they're going to be able to measure what they output, right, and measure the people that are doing the things and be able to maybe look into some of those competencies and those things in their DNA.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's kind of like two big parts for me. One is, you know, as you're talking about, you're sort of creating a model of, like, this can be done. Mm-hmm. Right, like, you know, if you look at it from an organization standpoint, many organizations, oh, you know, we don't have the time, the money, like, you know, productivity is measured on metrics of patient outcomes or hours or billing, and not these other things that really drive the quality of the care that's going on, not just for your organization but for the profession, right? Yeah. And so I think that's one is, like, yes, we need to measure all sorts of things about what you're doing.
Sure.
And I think our model is probably, you know, a good place to start with that and say, like, okay, here, you know, let's get some baseline data. Let's see, you know, as folks come through, how does that change them and what's their trajectory look like over time? But then the second thing I think about is sort of this idea of, like, innovation and excellence. And we talk about that a lot. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so excellence being sort of the gap between where practice is now to what we know is current best practice, right? And so you're filling that, you know, gap. You're getting people engaged and learning and seeing the evidence. And then you have the innovation gap of, okay, well, what's current best practice? And then where do we need practice to be in order to really meet the societal needs that, you know, that we have in our sort of duty to society as a profession? And I think that, you know, often we try to go to this innovation section without establishing the excellence. You are having the plan for excellence. you don't have excellence, you don't have the plan for excellence, but, oh, we want this shiny thing, you know, here off in the future. And I think, you know, what you're talking about is building a model of how do you become excellent in providing best care, measuring that best care, you know, understanding it, institutionalizing it so that this is what's going on.
Yeah.
And then from that, I mean, to me, innovation just, like, naturally flows from there, because you start asking those questions of, well, this is great, but how do we do it better?
Right.
And now we have the tools because they've been involved in, you know, research, the mentorship. You have all these pieces that are there. And so you say, okay, you know, let's ask the next question, the next question, the next question down the road.
Well, it creates a culture where those questions are safe, right? Because a lot of times when you have a very finite definition of what good is or what's expected of me, it doesn't create this culture not just of learning, but of, hey, this is a great place we can be curious.
Right.
We can try things. We can think about it, because that knowledge gap, I mean, we're talking about 17 years, right, between research to actual practice. Well, how do we shorten that, right? How do we increase it? Because it's 17 years and 13%.
What does that mean, 13%?
So only 13% of the evidence makes it to clinical practice at 17 years.
So it's not everything at 17
years. It's not
years.
Even everything.
That's not a whole statistic.
It's one paper out of 10, let's call it, actually makes it into practice at the 17-year mark.
That's a career.
It's insane is what it really is. So create those cultures that you are innovating. You can bring new knowledge. You're not stuck in your ways.
Yeah.
And you just have this curiosity, this challenging. But the other thing you hit on is having a holistic definition of success. You're right. If the only measure of success for an organization is productivity, you're missing out a whole lot. It has to be about outcomes. It has to be about the number of lives that are being affected. It has to be about the experience of the clinician and employee. Because if you're only doing one, you're not going to have longevity.
Yeah, I like that, which is, if I only define good as hitting this target, I'll get good at hitting that target. I won't think about a different target to hit, because you're rewarding me for hitting that target more frequently and more dead center. But you're saying the innovation There was a motivational, I love those goofy motivational posters they used to hang in businesses. And the radio station I worked at was no different. One I actually liked, and it was, talent hits a target nobody else can hit. Vision hits on a target nobody else can see. When you create an environment that says, you can ask, hey, what if we were to, and then that's when I get to pin out and go, yeah, tell me a little bit more. When you can ask those, knowing that, listen, hey, 1 out of 100 of those is going to be valid, but that means I got to get 1,000 of those to get how many good options. Yeah. So I think back and forth, which is asking those good questions and being able to put it and putting it into practice, are two good things.
Yeah. And also, if you don't agree with that target, well, then I need to go somewhere else.
Right.
So having a holistic definition of success lets people see, hey, you care about all aspects of this. I can get behind it. This is probably a place I want to stay to go back to my hands. Like, you're not going to have organizational engagement if you don't agree with the target that's being put out in front of you.
And it is about retention, but it's about retaining the right people, I imagine. Sure. Like, hey, like if this isn't for you, I'd rather you leave now. You're taking up a seat for someone that might take this who is a better fit. You'll be happier. We'll be better. Our patients will be better because we'll have the person that this fits with.
Certainly.
You know, and some of the data that, that we've seen in some recent work, has shown that one of the strongest alignments, in these learning like cultures is this idea of a shared vision between patient care and learning. That it's not like, in fact, there's some really good work from Van Schiek and I can't remember where they're from, but anyway, they talk about creating learning-centered environments instead of patient-centered or learner-centered, which we've, sort of this, academic, clinical divide have always come at things like, okay, well, we're patient-centered, we're learner-centered, whatever. And they say, no. Like, really the point is to be learning-centered and that learning is at the service of ultimately, providing better care for patients. But, it's all intertwined. That work and learning and development, it's all just the same kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, patient first can't be therapist last.
Right.
Ultimately, and happy patients plus happy employees is really the route to any business success, whether it's in healthcare, PT, or anywhere.
Yeah. If more people wanted to find your work, where are they going to look?
Physical Therapy Journal. So I think whatever the January edition.
We'll put the link in the show notes, and the press release just went out. Like I feel like I said earlier in CSM, I'm like I don't really, I really do breaking news, but I feel like I get to be Adrian Wojnarowski and drop a Woj bomb. I was like, there's this IMISCA thing. By the way, we both went to St. Bonaventure University. Adrian Wojnarowski dropping Woj bombs. But more information about IMISCA, I'll put in the show notes. But the press release just went out. Like, this is quite literally
press. Our external announcement on Tuesday, but folks can get more information at i-mska.org.
So awesome.
I-MISCA. And it is IMISCA, not IMSCA.
Yeah.
And there's more debate on that than you probably imagine.
Yeah. We discussed that with Sharon just yesterday. Very confused.
Great. That sounds like an amazing thing. I'd love to hear more about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Last thing we do on the show is the parting shot. You guys have both done this before. Just some mic drop moment, just an idea or a sentiment you'd want to leave with the audience. What do you got? Parting shot, Rain.
Come back to me. I'm not sure.
All right. Time's up.
I would just say, it's really hard to fill a leaky bucket. We're about meeting societal demand and the demand that's out there for physical therapy services. We spend a ton of time at conferences talking about how much more we could do, but we're not meeting the demand that's there right now. In order for us to plug that hole and really kind of stem down that professional attrition, I think we got to get a lot better at helping people find their professional identity.
Okay. Rain, parting shot, something you want to sum up your work or...
I don't know, man. I
have a parting shot for you, which is I liked how you paid attention to sort of the DNA of a person. I like how you actually said you looked at lifelong learning and said, that's nice. Those two words together sound very nice. What's that mean? And you looked into it and said, what drives someone who decides that they're going to call themselves a lifelong learner? I think if you asked everybody here at CSN, everybody would pretty much say, I'm a lifelong learner. What's that mean, though? That sounds very nice, but what goes into it? And I like how your research actually shocked you a little bit, but you went into it and said, oh, that's why these people are doing this. Because if we don't understand it, we can't fix that bucket at all.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go back to the excellence in innovation piece and just really saying, that initial focus on the excellence and learning how to be excellent, how to really understand in depth what you're doing, you know, being curious about how to be the best at that,
yeah.
all those characteristics, and then, you know, and then let the innovation, you know, happen from there. And, you know, and I think as a profession, that's something that we're, you know, struggling with
sure.
At the moment. And so, you know, keep the eye on the excellence with the intent of getting to that target yeah. that can't be seen.
And I like the person that isn't at this table in this conversation, which is the listener or the clinician. Everything you heard these two guys say, do an assessment. Are you in an environment that does that for you? That might be why you're frustrated and thinking about leaving PT altogether. Maybe that's not the answer, is to completely jump out of your profession. Maybe look at yourself and say, yes, I can see why my drivers, which are good, probably not going to change because it's my DNA, you know, it's part of me.
Yeah, right.
I'm in the wrong spot, right? The phrase is, you know, if you ask a fish to climb a tree, it'll think it's stupid its whole life. It's like, no, just put a difference, put it in the water, man. So I think it's good for people to hear these things, to say, maybe I all these things I'm feeling, I think I could do more and be more. I think I'm better than this. You might be you're probably right. Maybe you're in the wrong spot. So keep looking for that and asking those critical questions, which is why when I talk to students, I say, if you're on a job interview, the saying back when I was, you know, going to my first job interview was, have a question or two ready. I now go and say, 50% of the talking should be by you as the person for the interview. It's not a, this isn't a game show. You're not trying to win a job here. Try to figure out if this is a place that aligns with you. Because if it doesn't, whew, that's a hard Monday. That's a bad Sunday night going into Monday morning every time you get up. Gentlemen, thanks so much for stopping by the booth here at CSM. I know you guys are busy, so conversations like this are great when they happen here and they get to leave the four walls of the center.
Great. Thank you very much.
Appreciate the opportunity.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC. It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jim McKay and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University. We talk PT, drink beer, and record it. This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.